You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Nicole Hale. That's right, the gang's all here. How's it going?
Hey!
Chris McFeely is very excited. He's been yelling at his computer.
No, you caught me off guard. I'm not plugged in
for the last, like... Well, no, not that. It's just that you've been...
You have to go 1, 2, 3, and go.
You've been just, yelling...
1, 2, 3, go.
1, 2, 3, go. You've been yelling at your PC for, like, the last 30 minutes is more so what I was getting at, which has been awesome.
You guys, I wish our audience could listen to the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Oh, I know. There's priceless things that happen. So before we get to anything, we're going to have some news because we've got Emerald City Comic Con is this weekend. So there's been some panels and things, and Chris McFeely has been watching avidly, gathering all the information so you can bring it to us.
Something happened.
There was a Comic Con this weekend. And some decent news, actually, I think, out of it.
If you guys don't mention it, I will totally mention it because it sounds awesome.
Okay. And then we'll also have some Batman news as well that we're going to talk about in just a second. But real quick, I'm going to indulge myself, take a little bit of time to mention something that happened to me this week. Let me see if I can get this pulled up. I will post this on Twitter as I am talking about this. So as it happened this week, I was at my comic book shop, and usually I go on Wednesday. Didn't get to go. Went on Thursday this week. I walk in, and there's a large group of the regulars all sitting around, and they're all sitting around this huge table, and I can tell there's comics on one part of it and a bunch of figures on the other part. And
I have a feeling something's being sacrificed here.
And no.
Well, there are probably plenty of virgins hanging around.
There was a priest, so I don't know. There was a priest, I didn't ask. Anyway, so they're all sitting around this table, and they're like, and actually one of the guys is like, can I get you a drink? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And so I get handed this drink, and I'm looking at this table. And so if you're watching the show, or you go back through our Twitter feed, you can see this picture that's going to pop up here in just a moment. And this is the table I'm looking at of comics. And if you're looking at it, you'll notice it is quite a decent spread of Silver Age comics. Some first issues. Captain Marvel. There's Doctor Strange in there. You've got Spider-Man No More, Captain America number 100, Avengers 50. So I'm looking at this, like, and my jaw is just on the floor, you know. And there is one thing that sticks out to me, and it is the Iron Man. And as you may know, like I've talked about a little bit, like Iron Man was the first comic I had a subscription to, always had a little bit of fascination with exosuits. So even as a kid, I really liked Iron Man. I even have like the Iron Manual that has like all the details about the suit, you know, and like loved it. So
my God.
Yeah, I know. So I was like, I got to ask. And so it took him a little bit and he got me a price on it. And I did buy it, and I have it here. So if you're watching on the video, you can see it's in a nice thick plastic. It is virtually pristine. Like this issue is in beautiful condition. It almost makes me cry to look at it, and I am so excited that I own it. So anyway,
This was another just the regular at the store who was selling his collection, or the...
Yeah, he was actually leaving town, and I think Buck, who owns my shop, had offered to buy it before, and he got turned down. And now that the guy was leaving town, he was really trying to sell it. So Buck gave him an offer, and he took it. And so that's why kind of everybody was all sitting around because they're kind of celebrating that he got this great.
This was stock in the store then.
He had
bought it at the. Yeah. Okay, I was just trying to figure out if this off. The store
he bought it. Yeah, and so. I think I was the first person to buy anything off of the table, actually. So it was like, and that's one of the reasons I got it, is because it was like, if I let it sit, it's going to be gone. Like, I know there was other collectors, and he actually gave me a really good deal on it. So Anyway, there you go. That is like easily like my most expensive collector's item right now.
Are you going to frame it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's my plan. I want to frame it and hang it up here in my office. So yeah.
It's a good one to have because like even when you're talking about like important issues, it's got a great cover. I mean, it's got a classic cover. Everybody remembers that one.
Yeah. What I love though is I've told a couple people, I'm like, I got Iron Man number one. And the first thing they say is, which one?
Yeah, that's what I said.
That's exactly what
I said. Okay, which one?
I'm like, no. The number one. Right. But which the number one? No. Anyway.
Yeah, I know Kieran Gillen is
the number one.
Right. Exactly. No, the number one. Oh, like Matt Fraction, like the 2 point. No.
Like Heroes Return?
Damn it.
Yeah.
Heroes Reborn?
Heroes Return from the 90s? I think even Brian was like, volume 2? I'm like, no. Number one. So, anyway. So, I'm sorry. I just, thank you for indulging me, but
Well, congratulations on the new member of your family.
I know. I'm so happy.
On your new arrival.
Yes, on my new arrival. So, awesome. So, let's talk some new stuff. Do you want to talk new stuff or Batman first? What do you want to talk first?
Batman at the end, because there's not much otherwise.
Okay.
Just have to run through a couple of things that have been announced recently. It's been announced. These are just quick hits, really. There's been no major announcements seem to have come out of. Which convention is it?
Emerald City.
Emerald, the ECCC.
It's in Portland, I believe, but I don't know why they call it Emerald City. But.
They've announced that Scott Snyder.
Or whatever, yes, yeah. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Awesome. Scott Snyder and Jim Lee's still officially untitled Superman series is going to start in June, which at the same time as the new Greg Pak Batman Superman that we talked about last week.
Mm.
How can they not call it Man of Steel? That just makes so much sense.
They probably are. They just haven't officially yet.
Yeah.
That would make so much sense, you know?
They've also announced that... kind of have to roll my eyes at this one. Remember WTF Certified with their gatefold covers that'll make you go, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'd forgotten about those until you just mentioned them, actually.
Yeah. Well, the gatefold covers and everything are still happening, but they're not going to have the WTF Certified branding on them anymore.
Okay. Huh. What did they...
Because...
Did Disney go, or Warner Brothers go, no, you can't do that.
I don't know if we don't... Well, I mean, Didio's explanation is we don't need it. But it really seems like somebody... maybe they got complaints, or maybe somebody upstairs...
Somebody said that stupid, or...
That reeks of corporate going...
That's a rude word. No. Don't do that. Yeah. Which is probably about right, to be fair.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's weird.
So that's the thing. DC have also announced that Pandora is getting an ongoing series.
No way.
In June. Yeah. It's called Trinity of Sin Pandora. And apparently Phantom Stranger is getting renamed Trinity of Sin Phantom Stranger.
The question?
Trinity of Sin question truly be far behind, you know?
Mm.
No actual word of that or anything, just can it truly be far behind, you know?
Sometimes I hate Dan DiDio, because there was a question there, it was like, well, who is the question? He's like, well, that's the question, isn't it? Fuck you, Dan DiDio.
I see what you did there.
Marvel had no major announcements this week, but a lot of teases. Because we've had the first one we saw was, well, the teaser took the form of a large number one, made up of the names of many Marvel heroes, and that's it. It's just the word first, like some overeager YouTube comment and douchebag.
Oh God!
Firsties. So is this gonna be like their summer event?
I mean, is it people that don't have books now, or what? I mean, like, what are the names?
No, they're all just, they're recognizable heroes, real heroes, just real major heroes.
I think I know what it is. It's the Return of the Century, because he's the original Superman, remember?
Oh, my God!
Oh, if you keep making jokes about the century coming back, he will come.
You die! You go to hell and you die! No!
Keep reminding, if you remind them he exists, he returns!
It's like Beetlejuice.
Shut up.
You can only mention it so many times.
We have to, we must collectively forget that he exists. That's the only way.
I love that the actual storyline for that character reflects reality. People want to forget him, he also needs to forget that he is a hero in order to save us all. I love that. That's just kind of awesome.
Yeah. It was a great joke originally until they kept fucking bringing him back.
Thanks, Ben. Okay. And whether or not this other thing has anything to do with this first thing, it's a similar thing. It's a black poster, and it's with red text, same as the first one, and it's what do you call them? Count marks, cuts in the page.
Like hash marks.
Hash marks, that's it. Thank you. I wanted to say hash tags, and I couldn't get the right word at all. Yeah. And I'm just trying to remember what exactly the precise phrase was, if there was a phrase on it, because I'm a very bad news reporter, and I don't have it sitting in front of me right now.
Okay.
But
you're
the,
fired.
I know.
No.
Okay, I'll go.
No. She has no authority here.
I'm the lowest man on the totem pole here. If you listen to me, that's your fault.
Wow.
Okay, no, right. There was no text on this one. I didn't think there was, but I just needed to check. But the hash marks, I think there's a sly jab in here because they count up to 52.
Oh, you've got to be kidding
me.
Ooh. Marvel's good at 52?
Wow. That's funny.
Yeah. And it has been 52 years since Fantastic Four number one, but...
Ooh.
Hmm.
Mm.
Who knows?
And they are the first family of Marvel Comics.
Hmm.
That's true.
We
really just don't know what it is. I mean, they have the Marvel Now logo on them, both of these posters. We just don't know. That's about the height of what we've got out of Marvel this week. I haven't seen any Marvel news out of ECCC. I'm just doing a quick double check here to make sure.
Yeah, I don't think I saw anything.
But I don't. Of course. We have discovered that Gail Simone is going to write Red Sonja at Dynamite.
This is the one I heard about. I was like, if you didn't mention
crap.
Yeah.
That is like,
that's
that is
cool.
Like,
that's neat.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I can't even,
Yeah.
I kind of want to get this book now.
I know.
The most perfect matchup of creator and character, like, ever, maybe?
Yeah. It's...
There will be so much violence.
I know.
It'll be so...
But will she have anybody to be girlfriends with?
Hmm. She kills them first. Yeah. Hmm. This could be interesting.
That, I think, is pretty much... that's about it, yeah, by and large, apart from the big bit of news that everybody's really talking about this week, which we've saved to the end here, which is... No, this is spoilers, okay?
Right.
If you're very saved, big spoilers.
If you have
very
not...
Big.
Okay, so, and this is Batman-related, so if you've not read Batman Inc. number one or kept up with
like,
any...
I mean, it's like, this is not a real Batman book, okay? This is the Batman book that's happening off...
This
book.
Is...
Don't say it's not a real...
Hey, I'm not knocking it. I'm looking forward to getting the trades, but... It's happening off in its own little world, and none of the other Batman books are referring to it like it even exists, and it's sure as heck pretending like the new 52 didn't happen.
That's kind of...
Yes.
Except for this.
Except
that's
for
gonna
this.
Spoilers.
Yeah, so yeah. Spoilers. Proceed spoilers. At your own risk. You may need to skip ahead a bit.
Spoilers!
Okay.
We'll date stamp the... the spoilers in the show notes or something.
Something, yeah.
But,
probably
yeah,
not.
So, in, you know, just put it in the show notes. Just say, between this point and this point, skip. Do your job!
Yeah, I'd totally do that. Okay.
Okay, now, okay, spoilers, so, yeah. Spoilers over, so let's go ahead and tell them that, you know, Bruce Wayne is Batman. We found
right.
it out.
Jesus. Definitively. We know for sure now. Okay.
What is this happening?
Apparently he's been Batman for, like, what, 60 years?
Who knew?
Good God.
And he doesn't
probably
like
enough spoilers.
Yeah.
Batman Inc. number 8, Damian Dice.
What the hell?
I
have no contact.
I got the... I mean, I was like... Because, like I said, I didn't pick up books on Wednesday, but I saw this, and so I went ahead and downloaded it on Comixology, and I read it, and I'm just like, what? No! It's not! I'm like, well, this is ink! You know, maybe it's not really... It's not really part of the world. Like, it'll be separate, you know? It'll be like, that's just in the ink world, and now they're talking like... No, this is a thing. This is a thing across all the 50. I'm like, no!
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask, because, like, Batman Inc. is its own universe. So,
well, supposedly.
Why would that make a difference in the other universe?
Because it is technically part of the New 52. It's just that they haven't been referring to those events.
Gordon's in a wheelchair. Spoilers, Batgirl.
Is she still in a wheelchair in the post-New 52, in the Batman Inc.?
Yes.
Is she really? Good God.
Yeah, like, two or three issues back, they did a future story where, you know, Damian is Batman. Batman basically gets...
Oh,
like,
that doesn't count.
You gotta be reading
this. Future, like...
Yeah, that's some future.
That was, like, the last issue that I read, but I want to say back, yeah, like, but... at the beginning of Batman Inc., she was still in the wheelchair. Like,
well...
She was definitely in the wheelchair in the pre-New 52 Batman Inc., because she was in, like, one of the very last issues, if not the very last issue of the Batman Inc.
Yeah,
I can't even remember.
So...
Well, a context, I haven't read this because I'm waiting for the trades on Batman Inc. to go with my complete trades of the other Morrison Batman books, so I have no context for this. But I mean, if you're talking about if she hasn't appeared in the present day of the post-New 52 Batman Inc., then okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if she appears in the wheelchair in the future...
Like, there can always...
In the wheelchair in the future, that's because we've seen that future before already, very early on in Morrison's Batman, so he's just maintaining consistency with that.
And even Simone, I think, has left the door open to the possibility that whatever it is that has healed Barbara may not be permanent, and that, you know, something
Make
could...
up your minds, DC!
And dude, Batman's got a different costume in it, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but anyway, it doesn't matter because, I mean, we had all kind of felt safe... Because we kind of thought this was separate, and I did too. I saw it, and I'm like, well, that's just ink, though.
Yeah.
And now they're doing it and I'm like, so now I'm having to deal with this, because, like, at first, it's like one of those deals is, like, you go back, and, like, the first time I heard about Damian, I'm like, well, that's stupid. Yeah. And then I read Batman and Robin, and I fell in love with Damian. I'm like, Damian's awesome. I get it. You know, it's like, I get that he's
awesome.
Like this ideal Robin in the sense that he's like got all the training and he's Batman's son and he's kind of a prick, but you know, he's got all the stuff. It's
he
just
needs
like...
he needs to be bent over the knee and given a good spanking every once in a while. That kid is annoying.
Well, and
he
Batman tries to do that, but I think that
Damian would be the one that would be doing the spanking.
Yeah,
you know?
Really. I mean, but and then you had that excellent moment at the end of like the last issue of Batman where Damian's like, you know, looks at Bruce and he's like, you know, is my face okay? Is it? And then they like embrace, yes. And you like, and I'm like,
okay.
Oh,
that was really
finally,
cool.
You know.
And there is another comic called Batman and Robin starring Bruce and Damian. What in the hell, you know? So
well, they've released all these reaction covers for like next month's Bat books, so this is happening. I mean, I think everybody pretty much assumes at this stage that this was Morrison's plan from the get-go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Introduce this kid in his first arc, make everybody hate him, then make everybody love him, and then kill him. I mean, I mean, obviously, I know this happens at the very end of the comic, so we do not have the fallout from it yet, but Damian can be, like, genetically healed up by his mum. We have seen that happen.
Correct. Correct.
So I don't know what way. I mean, I'm still assuming that he's probably. I mean, this is not like the last time that the Associated Press spoiled the fact that a character was going to die in Grant Morrison's Batman, in which he didn't, and then died in another comic a few months later.
And spoiled for the comic itself again, but you know there are two Damians. Did you read that part?
JD? I did not read that part.
Yeah, I didn't understand it, but I did read it.
Yeah, so like what he you know the remember all the way back at the beginning of Batman Inc. where they started going in this direction, and there was the big muscular dude that was beating the hell out of Batman like in another country or something.
Yeah,
he is a genetically engineered. Artificially aged version of Damien.
Ah, okay.
Because Talia has legions and legions of these things that she could pump out of vats if she so chose. There was a scene in... Where was it? Was it in... It must have been post-New 52 Batman Inc. that I must have seen somewhere where she had a little clone vat with a little fetus Damien in it.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't know what way we're going with this. But, I mean... One must assume that at the very least, Snyder and the other Bat writers, but specifically Snyder, since he's kind of like in charge of Batman at the minute, were at least aware that this was coming with the return of Batman Inc. and the fact that Morrison would be allowed to see this through. So most people seem to be under the assumption that Harper Lee is going to be the next... Harper Lee? No. What's the character's name?
Who? What?
Who? Huh?
That little runaway girl that's been hanging around in the Bat books... that was like not part of Death of the Family. Harper wrote.
Oh, I know. Yes. I know who you're talking about. That girl that was in the book
Harper
a couple
Lee
of months.
Harper Lee wrote. What did Harper Lee write To Kill a Mockingbird?
No, I know who you're talking about. Yes, that girl that was in that book with her brother that's gay, right? Like her brother's gay, runaways or whatever.
That issue that was like a standalone issue.
Yeah, that we were like, girl seems like she's going to be important, you know. And then we haven't heard
Most
much from her.
Most people seem to be thinking, like, she's being groomed for the new Robin role. This is just speculation, of course, but...
Excuse me, it's not kind of makes sense.
Before we leave to talk about Batman Inc., because I'm not going to really get into talk about it when I do recommendations, I do want to say one thing. There's a great scene in the book. Where basically it's like Damian and Nightwing fighting off bad guys, and they're like behind this table or something waiting to attack, and it's just so great. You know, he's like, this is our last chance to prevent a catastrophe. Are you with me, Nightwing? The odds are completely stacked against us, and Nightwing's like, when did we ever let something like that get in our way? Robin, the boy wonder, Damian, and he says, so far, Robin says, so far as I'd say, you've been my favorite partner. You were the best, Richard, no matter what anyone thinks. That was awesome.
It was definitely like a Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid kind of moment,
Because the whole thing, like, people kind of were bitching about, Batman, Dick Grayson's Batman and Batman and Robin.
No bullshit. Damian and Dick were the best Batman and Robin, ever.
Somehow found a way to basically continue adventures of them with New 52, I would have been happy. Even if it was its own continuity like Batman Inc. is, I would have been 100%.
That moment actually kind of got me because I'm like, oh, man, we're
that
going there.
That's the moment when you like really feel it and you're like, oh, yeah, he's dead.
It's like, this is going to happen. This is really going to happen.
Man, he goes down hard, too. I mean, God, that one...
Oh, day, man. Yeah. It's an intense fight.
It's not a quick death. It's like a fight.
I'm just like... But I'm still... And this is what I'm saying. Like, I'm in shock. It's like, I've never... it's one of those things where we didn't have any lead-up. And Kristen Triple and I were talking about this before the show. I mean, the distribution numbers on this issue of Batman Inc. were really low. Because... Yeah. Really, nobody knew until the issue was hitting stores what was going to happen.
Yeah,
so
long time until they spoiled it in the Associated Press.
But you think it, yeah, and they did. But by that time, it was too late because Monday is when the book is hitting stores. So they spoiled it about the time it would have been hitting stores. I mean, not for sale, but I mean for in the back. Mm-hmm. But there was no lead up to this. It was just like. Yeah. Here you go.
It was really hard to get copies of it, too, because, my comic shop said they normally order 8. I guess they've got 8 people that are got pull list for it. They got four. They said I was very lucky that I got an issue. They said that it's already going, I think, to second and third printing is what they said. I don't know.
Well, DC, I mean, a point was made a while back that DC basically said, we can't tell you why, but you haven't ordered enough of this. Was they just kind of told comic shops that.
And I doubt anybody listened, though. I don't know how many.
That's it.
I mean,
and they're saying the same thing about the next issue of Detective Comics. No, well,
really? I think I was reading a tweet or
just
something earlier.
That's the first Fallout.
I think I was reading a tweet or something earlier that that issue is going for $15 or more on the floor right now at Emerald City Comic Con. And if you have like the signed, if you have like the signed copies, it's going for $4.50. So the first printing of this is going
to. $50 for a comic.
Yeah, $450.
That's pretty good considering the book was $3 when it came out.
Yeah, so
that's $1.50 profit.
That's mad, son.
Yeah,
$450.
That's insane.
I know that you know, you prick. Anyway.
I really like this issue because, like, even the stuff, like, the reason that Batman wasn't around, they had taken him out in the first issue, the issue before this, and they basically Houdini'd him. He's in a safe, and they threw him in the river. And the reason they did it is Talia had tested him to see how fast it would take him to get out of all these situations. And she knew he'd get out, but she set it up so that there'd be not enough time for him to get out to save him. Like, she set all this shit up. She knew that this was going to happen.
Oh, and the worst part, though, is, I mean, not begging. It's like, you know, Damian is sitting there begging her to stop, you know, to stop all of this insanity. And not so much, like, to save himself, but just in general.
She's trying to save her is what it is.
Yeah, I know. And it's like heartbreaking. Ah!
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. We've talked about this way too much. But anyway.
Yeah, that's the recommendation for that one.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, seriously. It's an interesting issue. Even out of...
If you can find to pick it up.
If you can find it. I mean, you can get it digitally in Comixology, so if you're not worried about owning it. Man.
Yeah, totally works.
But yeah, so anyway. So good. Wow. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. It's like, it's literally like, so many comic book characters, JD, you get a chance.
Listen,
like, you get
go outside. Experience life, JD. Experience life again.
I know.
Live for Damian.
Live for Damian. I know. But, like, so many books nowadays, it's like you get lead time. It's like, you know, like we knew Johnny was going to die, you know, and we had, like, a little bit of lead time.
We didn't know Johnny was going to die.
We knew somebody was going to die, and so we kind of had a little bit of time. And we all, and
2 days before,
you know, yeah, there was a little bit of spoilers.
Yeah. Eddie's going to be me.
You know, but
Charles is eliminated. Everybody else on the team has died except for Johnny.
Yeah. So I mean, but in you know, and a little bit of lead up for kind of what's happened in Spider-Man, but this is just like out of the blue. It's just like, no, Damian's dead, and it's like I can't. It's like I don't believe it, you know? I'm, like, in shock. It's like they were in a car accident and they're gone, you know? It's like, what? Like, I can't even. I don't know. Anyway. All right.
You know what? You need to get number nine.
I think I'll do the trade, like Chris. I think I'll do the trade, but...
Now you have to go back and buy all the other Mars.
I am. And I'm kind of very slowly working my way through. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the plan, but... all right, well, let's move on then, and because we've, I guess, spent a lot
move
of time on
like
this.
Batman.
He won't move on. God, the image of him holding Damian's body, I'm just, like, heartbroken. I can't.
He is going to move on, because there'll be a new Robin.
There will be, but, man.
Obviously, this is DC's chance to totally go back on everything and just make Dick Grayson and Robin again, because everything should be like it was in the 50s.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit gone. I think of anybody, though, you know, I'm not saying...
I think maybe they'll quit calling him Red Robin. Maybe they'll start being Robin again.
You know, though, thinking about that, though, you think about the person that this will probably weigh heaviest on, it might actually be Dick. Because they did spend so much time working together in that way, and I don't know that, you know, Bruce
or did
and...
Or 52, woo.
Anyway, all right.
No, I don't think so. I think
God, heartless bastard. Anyway, all right. Who's up first? Chris Triplett, go, sir. Or is that your pick? You picked. You picked Batman Inc. Do you just want to move on from there?
Dude, like if we were doing the actual book we talked about this week at the top of the show, it is Batman Inc. Right? There really was no other book this week, but we talked it to this, so there you go. But the other book that all of you should have been reading because it's the end of an era is Punisher Warzone number 5.
Oh, yeah.
That's it, fellas. Greg Rucka is done. And so ends the good Punisher comics as we move towards Marvel now. Which means Marvel's no more Punisher, I guess. I don't know. I'm stretching it there. But, dude, yeah, like,
give it 2 years and another movie comes out. They'll bring it back.
Hey, no movie is going to have someone get shot with a missile as they're flipping through the air, okay? That's just not going to happen again.
I don't know. It's like all of next month's Marvel comics can be WTF certified, and that can be, where's that, Frank? Certified.
Yeah. God.
Punisher movie, shit. Okay, I'm gonna tell you out because I would love to see a new Punisher movie because I was watching. I don't know why. It's like I saw Punisher.
Chris, I'm gonna stop you there for just a second. Yeah. Your audio has gone crazy. Do you have something auto downloading in the background? Can you turn your porn off? Turn the porn download off.
Oh, I ain't doing that. No, it's not working out. Any better?
Turn off the porn bit torrents.
I'm not. Shut up. Is it working now? I don't know.
No, we're getting a lot of interference. It does sound like you've got like something running in the background. You have antivirus running. Sure you don't have any porn downloading? You're not streaming porn at the same time, are you? You're not like at a streaming site.
Welcome to Fanboy Versus, where we go through computer difficulties.
Yeah.
Live on air!
Press 1 for English. Press 2.
I'm playing.
Now, why would I press 1 for English if I'm going to talk to somebody I'm not going to be able to understand anyway?
I'm playing guys, because I'm hearing you guys fine. So I'm
yeah,
guys.
So it's got to be you. No, wait, talk for just a second, I think.
Okay.
Okay, you're much better now. Okay, good. I don't know what you did, but you fixed it. All right. Go ahead. So anyway,
I didn't do anything.
Punisher?
I'm blaming JD on this one. I mean, it's usually your problem, you know?
No.
But, dude, Punisher wasn't, you know, comic good, like I said. It's basically the, you know, it's the Avengers versus Punisher, really. I mean, it's a fight he can't win. I mean, really, is there, even if Greg Rucka was writing this and Greg Rucka loves the Punisher, Greg Rucka is not going to write the story where the Punisher beats the Avengers. But it's still fun to watch. And it's great because it basically is that he's going to fight the Avengers basically to slow them down so that you know, his partner can get away, Sergeant Cold. Because, you know, she was on trial for murder. He did all of this, you know, with fighting the Avengers just to save her. He saved her to give her, like, a second chance. He's going to, like, you know, take one for the team. And it's cool because basically he makes Tony Stark look like, you know, nothing. Like, he out, the Punisher out-thinks Tony Stark several times. In the last issue, the Avengers thought that they had strength. They thought that they had him captured. They were, like, you know, planning to move Sergeant Cold somewhere else and, thought he was going to attack the truck and it would get in there. But no, he met and he attacked Tony Stark and he stole an Iron Man suit. And he attacked the Avengers with the Iron Man suit. I mean, it's just crazy stuff that's going on in it. He knows that he can't win, but he's doing what he can to kind of save this person, you know, save his partner. And it is in such a good way. Like, it's stuff, you know, of course, you know, they capture him. Spoilers for the book. This because it's Thunderbolts, you know, he's going to be working for Thunderbolts. But it ends in a good way because it's like, it's kind of like, you know, the war is over for Punisher, you know, but, you know, war continues. He's just a man, but, you know, in the end, it's like he's inspired Cole, and it's kind of like she is now in, you know, Greg Rucka's world, new Punisher. And it's a story we'll never see. It's kind of sad.
But it's still kind of like, you know, his story can kind of go on, you know, like in your mind, like thinking like where else would this story go? Because he even said in the letters page, I don't think it's Rook, it's one of the editors. You know, it just ended a lot sooner than we wanted it to. We were hoping this would run a whole lot longer, but they were like thinking Marvel at least to give him a chance to do this miniseries, kind of new tie up story. And it's definitely worth a pick. If you love Rebecca's Punisher, you totally got to read this just to get your kind of finality.
Sweet. So we want to thank Stephen Hawking for for his comic review this week. I'm pretty sure he was talking about Punisher. I'm sorry, Chris.
the thing I wondered about this miniseries was whether or not it would have, like Ruckus Punisher, like whether or not it would have ended this way if the Avengers movie hadn't happened.
Mm.
Because they really had nothing to do
with
anything, you know?
Yeah.
We had a Spider-Man and a Daredevil crossover, and that was about it as far as other things intruding themselves on this little world of Ruckus Punisher. And then suddenly it's a miniseries about the Avengers, and not just the Avengers, but like the Avengers with Black Widow and Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wonder if this is how this would have turned out. I'm not saying it massively negatively impacted on the flow or direction of Ruckus Punisher, but it does seem like an oddly superheroic universe-wide ending to Ruckus Punisher for a story that just did not really seem like that was the kind of thing it was doing for the majority of its run.
I think that they still would have had like escalation. I still think there would have been, because I think the stuff with Daredevil and Spider-Man was going to come back. I think that was going to be something where, you know, Spidey was going to come back and have something to do with the story. But I definitely don't think it would have been the Avengers. I think it would have been maybe another hero to come in.
Cool.
That's basically the only comment I have on this. It's not like it's a bad comment or anything. It's cracking stuff, but it just, I've been thinking this the whole length of this miniseries. Like, I don't think this is how this would have ended if the Avengers movie hadn't been a runaway success.
Yeah. Probably not.
It's cool, though, at the end of the comic that they've got him beat, and they know they've got him beat, and Cap basically says, you know, stand down, Marine, that's an order. And he says, sir, yes, sir. And that was kind of cool. Because,
Yeah,
you guys got it. Yeah.
Neat.
But
cool.
Totally recommend it. Love it.
It's great. All right. Thanks, Stephen. And so... I'm sorry, Chris. I don't know what's up with your audio, man.
That is so insensitive.
It really is. Oh.
Sorry.
So it's very insulting to Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
to imply. Anyway, I'm sorry. Okay, Nicole.
No, okay. I'm going to talk about... The reason why this sold me is it's called the Uncanny Skull Kickers.
Yeah.
Apparently, there was a couple of other series called the Skull Kickers. So this is a jumping on point here. And it has it as a number one, says first issue again. And they talk about it in that it is kind of a ploy. The guy was, the artist or the writer was having a hard time selling the Skull Kickers. And he knew he had a good hit on set. And someone suggested, why don't you just, on your next series, put Uncanny at the front, and it'll sell. Guess what? It worked. So, just like the writer about this is a very tongue-in-cheek comic. Basically, it's about two unlikely combinations of heroes. You got an elf woman and a pirate guy that were actually battling against each other. And they're stranded on this island having to survive together. And some of the funniest things happen. Okay, they find, she goes out hunting looking for food. He decides to stay behind and drink rum. What's the name of the rum? Yo ho ho. Yo ho ho rum. Come on.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so and instead of having oh crap, I just lost the name. Words with sounds. Oh, what is those called? Onomatopoeias, yeah.
Onomatopoeia, yeah.
Yeah, the onomatopoeias. Yeah. Instead of having, like, onomatopoeias, they actually just write out the sound. So they're like strange clickety-clack sound. Instead of, like...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It's one of the things. And she has to kill something with a steak, so you just hear the steak, 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 instead of, you know, the...
Oh, my God!
God.
Who is the creative team of this one?
This is the Image comic. It's Jim Zub. Pencils by Edwin Hung? I think that's how you say it. Hung? Yep. And colors by Misty Coates. It's so damn funny. And for a little bonus, you get to see, although the last 2 inches of each page, there is a strip of a dwarf that has drowned from the ship that they just got off of. And
oh my God.
It's just him and like his little adventures being dead for like the next 4 days. And you see like these fish starting to eat him. One goes into his ear. An eel takes his headband. It's just like this little thing. You're just like, what's going on here? And it's just a little joke strip. And dang, this is really funny. And it's got some great artwork in it. You get to see some terror turtles. You get to see some glacier
terror
giants.
Turtles.
Yeah, terror turtles. They come out at night.
Wow.
So they can't sleep on the beach. But it's so funny because they're on this adventure. They're trying to figure out why they're there, and then the very end, it's that last page, you're just like, oh my gosh. It's just really, like I said, tongue-in-cheek, very funny. If you don't like things, you want an adventure, but you don't want it serious, here you go. Awesome. Yeah, it's really funny. Like I said, just the onomatopoeias alone were still funny.
Steak, steak, steak. That's awesome.
Steak, steak, steak.
I don't remember that.
I've always heard pretty good things about Skull Kickers, but I've never read any of it, but that does sound rather good.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, at the very end, they give you a little extra. They're talking to the writer, and he's actually showing you how you could actually write a comic book and what it actually takes. It's like a little 5-page thing of how he has to do the script and the little notes that he has to give to the artist. So if you guys are kind of interested in how comic books work, this is a really good setup. Of course, he makes some like little jokes in the sidelines, and it's really fun. But yeah, so if you want to actually see how comics work, there you go.
Nice.
So,
cool.
Because he's been trying to get this more into the public eye, and guess what? It's good. I might have to go back and check out the rest of the previous Skull Kickers because it's funny. It's so much fun.
Sweet.
That's my recommend.
Okay. Very cool. Okay. So I'm going to I want to talk about Avenging Spider-Man. And it's real easy. Two reasons you should get this. Time Variance Authority and Deathhead.
Nobody knows what that is except you and me.
And Deathhead. So there you go. Awesome. And you're done. Really? Only us?
Yeah. Wait, Deathhead's in it?
Yes, Deathhead is in it.
Yeah, Deathhead is in it.
Deathhead's in Iron Man. I can just get Iron Man.
I think I tweeted yesterday. It's like, Deathhead is in everything now.
He is now.
It's like Marvel suddenly went, hey, we've got this character. Transformers is kind of cool, and we've got this guy that sort of got created in Transformers. Okay. Let's use him.
I hope he joins Guardians of the Galaxy.
God,
and then
yes.
Then he can be in the movie. And then we could say, Deathhead's in the movie. Yeah.
You have to give credit to Simon Williams. I think he's pimped out Death's Head more than anyone.
God, it's crazy. Yeah. Really, are we the only people that know about the Time Variance Authority?
Well,
I cannot remember what in the hell you're talking
about.
Oh,
my God, they're awesome.
Certainly the only two people on this show.
Well, okay, only two people on this show. Fair enough. All right, well, let me tell you about the book then, so that you will want to buy it. So, our story starts out as the FF, the replacement team of the Fantastic Four, calls Spider-Man in. They're like, all right, we got this thing. It's going on. It's in the Microverse, and you know, we're going to go help out with it. Meanwhile, like, Otto is going through each member of the team and, like, basically putting them down. As he's like, okay, Scott Lang stole all this stuff from Hank Pym, standing on the shoulders of miniature giants. And calls She-Hulk an ambulance chaser. Talks about Medusa. She's acceptable. And
this one is acceptable.
Dude, Otto should be totally attracted to Medusa because of the hair thing and the arm thing.
Yeah, I know. It's like a whole, yeah.
And then that's like his perfect woman.
The best is the Darla Deering because she's like, can I have your autograph? And he's like, I have no idea who this woman is. What was Richard thinking?
Nice.
So he's like, all right, fine. I will lead this mission into the microverse. And they're like, no. They need him to babysit. So he gets to babysit all the kids. Which nice. Goes about as well as you expect.
I'm fairly sure Parker used to be a member of this team. It'd be nice if some story at some point actually addressed why he's not anymore.
Yeah, well, there's that. You know, and he's going around all the kids, and Bentley, of course, he's immediately attracted to, who's inventing some weird time travel device. That'll be important in a minute. So meanwhile, Otto, like, goes off to do something he was planning on doing in the Baxter building anyway. We'll get back to that, too. Because he gets attacked by Death's Head, you know. And then it's this whole thing with the Time Variance Authority. And it's another one of those brilliant things where he kind of saves it by being a supervillain himself. Like, it's one of those things that really only by being a villain and talking to someone else who's sort of on that villain level that he's able to, like, make everything sort of right. And one of the funniest bits in this is the Time Variance Authority, of course, is aware that Otto is Spider-Man at this point. And he keeps interrupting them to keep them from spilling the beans. So, like, randomly, like, splats of webbing will come out of the side as someone's starting to say something and, like, cover their mouth and stuff. It is a great, fun book. It is what I'm, you know, in this particular issue, it's one of the things I was hoping for where, you know, we see Otto being Spider-Man without Peter, but there's even a kind of moment in here where you're thinking, that's Peter looking over Otto's shoulder.
Do you ever see Ghost Peter?
No, that's what I'm saying. You don't see Ghost Peter. But there's definitely a moment in here where it's like Ghost Peter's influencing what's going on.
Yeah.
There's a moment when, like...
Does he ever, like, say, like, why did I do that? Or, like,
kind of, yes. Exactly.
It sounds like a disease every time you guys say that.
Yeah.
Ghost Peter. Ghost.
He's got the Ghost Peter. Is that...
He's got a terminal case is of that, Ghost Peter.
Is that, like... Is that, like, when you have your arm cut off and, like, you still feel it?
Quantum Parker.
I'm thinking something. I'm thinking something else, but I'll let the listeners fill that in. Anyway, but there's like a moment when they like
he was sitting on the Joan all day. He had the Ghost Peter something fierce.
Oh man.
That's
yeah.
it. We're done.
But I mean, anytime that you've got like time travel and stuff going on, because like Peter actually kills Death's Head, so they pulled Death's Head in from another time.
Wait a minute, he kills Death's Head? Does that mean we're getting a Death's Head 3 now?
No, because they pull Death's Head in from another time. So Death's Head like is right back. He kills him, and with on the same page, Death's Head is back. And he's like, why am I dead? It's great. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's a great read. If you're any kind of like, you know, a little bit of classic, you know, Fantastic Four fan, then you'll know what the Time Variance Authority is. They've made some appearances in Fantastic Four. And there's a huge thing at the end of this book that I'm not going to tell you. So you're just going to have to buy it. But it is a deal where you're like, oh, shit.
I'll tell you what's really surprised me about Avenging in the 2 issues since Yost has taken over, which is that it's not just the inconsequential 1-issue team-up book anymore. There's Mm-mm. plots in it now.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like what it plots in the issues. I just mean there's a story going on across multiple there's subplots and stuff.
They're building to something.
Yeah, it's like this has been the book where it's like the one-off. It's like we've said, it's like the one-off Spider-Man book. But not anymore. You know, now it's like this is important stuff. This is stuff that's going to have ramifications, you know, later on down the line.
Which is odd to me, because one would think that this was the time when you would least want other writers mucking about with Otto.
Yeah.
But
it seems like a team-up book would be the better book to be doing for.
But
it
it's
right
like
now.
If you're gonna have if you're gonna have anybody do that, it's got to be Yost. Like, you know, Yost.
Oh my God.
No, you know, it's like,
I mean, faith in it,
yeah, I mean,
I'm sure he's well collaborated with Slott on whatever he's doing in there. But given that we are issue 5 is out next week, we are 4 issues away from what is being advertised as Superior No More. That's 2 more issues of Avenging. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And definitely there's hints in this that it's like there's going to be some serious ramifications. You know, the Time Variance Authority is using very bad language, you know, in this book relating to Otto being Spider-Man. So if you're not reading this book because this is like, oh, I can only read Slott for Batman or Batman for Spider-Man, you're missing out.
God, I want to read Slott for Batman.
Wouldn't you? But if you're only reading reading Slott Spider-Man, you are missing out. There's good stuff in here. It's a lot of fun. So
I wish Scott Snyder and Dan Slott could like switch companies for like.
Wouldn't
one
that
month?
Be fun? Like a little like exchange.
Snyder Superman Scott would be like Snyder's... the most depressing thing ever. This is
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
God. Yeah. Wow. We both kind of did that, Chris. Did you see that? Like you did. Yeah, that was awesome. Also, you should check out Uncanny Avengers because that's another
what
one that the last.
Are back, baby.
That's like it's so crazy. Like,
you know,
I love the book.
I thought about dropping Uncanny Avengers because I just wasn't feeling it. Now I picked up this issue, and I was like reading through, and I was like, what in the hell is going on in this book?
Yeah. It's like full of just bravado and craziness. It's just, and the last page is just, wow. He's like, oh, wow. They're doing it.
Really?
They're
going
there.
There.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I love it, because it's just kind of like crazy. So it's like, I'm just.
At a time when we make fun of DC for really making it seem like the 90s all over again, Marvel just went ahead and made it literally the 90s.
They
all
just
over
went it. There. But this book seems largely separate from things that are going on. So it's like, that's why I give it that, because it's like, this book is just trying to be out there. So I get that feeling anyway. So,
so
I don't know. We'll
so
see.
Like what you're saying is Professor X's head only got like cut off and Uncanny Avengers. It's his head's fine.
I'm just saying it's like not a lot of people are. I mean, I don't.
It's not in anything else.
I don't notice it being really referenced anywhere else. It's not like there's ramifications that are carrying over. So anyway.
Well, this is what we said about the Uncanny Avengers book: is that it is an odd one. It's like promoted as the flagship title of Marvel now. Immediately hit with huge delays as a consequence of the artist they put on it. Promptly eclipsed by the actual flagship titles of the two separate lines that it's supposed to be a merging of. Mm-hmm. It's a book that doesn't sit happily in either the X family or the Avengers family. There are bigger, better books coming out at the heads of both of those families. It's just this thing floating in the middle here that seems to progressively be acknowledging its own, I don't want to say irrelevance, but lack of importance.
Yeah.
By just being balls out crazy.
And I love it for that, though. Like, I'm like, go for it, man.
Yeah.
Like, just go there. And they're doing, and they are. They are totally going there. It's like, this book is insane, and I am, like, on the crazy train with it. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
So,
you know, mind you, just because I picked it up in my hand here, the Uncanny Team does actually appear in Young Avengers this month.
Oh, okay. Well, still.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah, I forgot
fucking
about that.
Awful Scarlet Witch costume. What the hell, Jill Cassidy? Seriously, it's dire. She's wearing an overcoat.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. So anyway, that's my stuff. So yeah. Go ahead, sir.
Well, before I start my things, you know, Dan Slott did write Batman.
Oh, that doesn't
surprise
me.
When did he write Batman?
He wrote a bunch of the Batman adventures books.
Oh, like the animated comics.
He wrote that, but he also wrote Arkham Asylum Living Hell.
What was that? I don't even remember that one.
That was a miniseries. It was a miniseries about this villain. I think he invented the villain, whose name was his nickname was the Great White Shark. You know, that was his mobster nickname.
I know
nickname.
Who that is.
And,
I'm a shark.
But I'm pretty sure this was the origin story for the Great White Shark, because the idea is that he pleads insanity as his trial so he can get sent to Arkham instead of be sent to prison, because Arkham's a revolving door.
Yeah.
That doesn't pan out so good for him, essentially. It's like, It's a Great White Shark. I think it's a 5-issue miniseries. I think the trade's still in print. Of the Great White Shark going, oh, crap.
I
don't know if you've ever... If you know the Batman, where's the villain? I think he was created for the book as well, Humpty Dumpty, breaks things and puts them together again, including people. That was one of Slott's, yeah. And like the progression of the thing.
Oh, I
is
thought you were
how...
talking about the Humpty Dumpty book that I reviewed a couple of years ago.
No, not that one. And I mean that was the. The through line of the thing is essentially how the Great White Shark, by being an Arkham, becomes a Batman villain, if you know what I mean. Like, stuff happens to him, and suddenly his name is a lot more fitting by the end of the story.
Mm.
Like, in the way that Batman villains have names.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Cool, I need to check those out. I need to find those.
Yes. I mean, I don't know where you would get the Batman... animated stuff.
Do you think maybe those could be on Comixology? Because I know some older stuff is.
Might be worth a look. Yeah. Living Hell is probably
Amazon,
more like
eBay. There you go.
I'm pretty sure the Living Hell trade is in print, so it's a good book. So check that
out.
Okay, so what am I talking about this week? I am going to start off by talking about this month's issue of FF, which is settling down.
Family
now,
friendly.
I think this is settling down now to show me what I can sort of expect out of this. Now that it is sort of separate from those couple of introductory issues, which were about, oh, here's the team being set up in connection with what's going on with the over Fantastic Four. This issue is almost entirely about She-Hulk and Wyatt Wingfoot going on a date. Because we had this Johnny Storm who proclaims to be Johnny from the future after the team went missing on their mission. And he's come back and said, oh, they're all dead. So they call Wyatt Wingfoot in to see if he can verify his identity. And Wyatt thinks it is Johnny, but I don't think a single reader of this comic thinks it's really Johnny. So that's why Wyatt's about, anyway. But the Moloids have developed a bit of a thing for the Gen. Because they are without the band. Yeah, they are without the band. So they have substituted the Jan.
Yeah.
They're quite impressed with her strength, you know.
Mm-hmm. Strength.
Well, yes. Well, they look up to the thing because of his incredible strength, you know, and then the fact that he saved them. So they've kind of moved over to the next super strong one, you know. But she's trying to explain to them what a date is while she's putting her makeup on and they're drinking her nail polish.
Oh my God. So,
Numb.
You know, they have a newspaper where she's caught punching the Miracle Man out in court, and it's like he's brought a lawsuit against her, and they say, can we have the autograph, the Jen? Are you joking? What jokes? He's suing me for assault, you know, that guy. Suing Storm? Can I help you, Tong? The Jen knows my name.
Oh my God.
It's like, I love these little guys. They never really seem to come to life under Hickman. I don't know why. Like, as in the tail end of FF, after all the big stuff was over, these guys really started to come to life. But they have really flourished under this little period under Fraction.
You know, it seems like everybody, because they seemed pretty fleshed out too in like Avenging as well. Like they had a couple of nice bits in there as well. So.
You know, they try to explain, you know, they don't know what a date is, you know. Is a date? And then one of them goes, a fruit is a date.
Fruit is a date?
Oh, my God.
And then the one, which one is it? I never remember which one's which. Turd, the one that's just a head in a floating jar, says, a date is for a men's and women's, or men's and men's, and women's and women's, and dates are for smooching.
Oh, my God.
And she purses her lipstick and she kisses Turg's jar, and there's a lipstick print left on it, you know, and it's just this silent panel as they all stare at the lipstick print on the jar after she's left, and they go, we do something drastic now, and they go to Bentley to get him to be a supervillain for them and ruin the date.
Yeah.
They want the Jan for themselves. What is it that they say? Their dialogue is so quotable. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, here we go. They say they just go to Bentley, who's making a sandwich at the time, like a giant, towering, evil sandwich. It's like, please, The woman we love pitches. The woman we love pitches her woo to someone else. Teach us how to evil. How to thwart the Jen's just dinner with an old friend.
Just dinner with.
Gentle moles, you came to the right place. And then the whole issue is just them doing various evil things to try and foil the date. But in, like, caper movie style, everything they do just winds up making the date better. Like, they hypnotize the manager of the restaurant they go to, but Bentley insists that the moles maintain plausible deniability by not giving him any specific instructions. So they tell him to go out there and do something unimaginable to the patrons, and he goes out and gives them all free meals.
Oh my god!
No. It's like when they're walking in Central Park, like where the river is frozen over and everything, the guys are in a little batiscope down in the river where they have decided to use ancient texts to raise Blarg the Unliving, Lost Leviathan of
Blarg
New Amsterdam. And, like, he can't get through the thick ice, and his evil glow just creates a beautiful light that they skate to.
Oh, my God!
So, yeah, the issue is something like that. It's basically about Bentley sucking at every attempt he makes to do villainy.
He just sucks as a supervillain.
And then the ending happens. And I'm not telling you what happens at the end, but it suddenly goes weird and creepy, and I'm like, what's going on, and when do I get more of it now? Why is this
sheep
bubble?
Yeah, this is the best death book. It is. It really is. Wow. I think
this
so,
is
anyway.
Probably what I'm seeing is probably not what's going on, because that speech bubble is a funny color. But what's going on? You know, it's a really fun issue, and it's like, it's the sort of issue that Mike Allred's art really sells as well. That fun, like, cartoonish, slightly silver agey, non-house style, atypical thing. It's a really, really great fun issue, and it's definitely my favorite issue of FF so far, because I think it sort of sets the tone for me about what a bit more what I can expect from the book as it goes on to establish its own identity. And you could really just pick it up and read it. If you just want something funny, I mean, it's February's issue, so it's basically a Valentine's Day issue, you know, even though it's not set. I think it's set on Valentine's Day or anything, but it's the love issue, you know. I mean, the cover is Turg licking a heart into the condensation he has breathed onto his helmet in front of She-Hulk.
Oh my god!
And she's got that shocking chalk look on her face. She's like, "What the hell?"
That's awesome.
I've said it before as well. I just really like Mike Allred's She-Hulk, so that's always nice as well, because this is her issue. It's always nice to read a She-Hulk comic, basically. You know?
God, yes.
Yeah, that's what
I
that
love
is.
This comic. I think that FF is actually better than Fantastic Four. I mean, I'm enjoying it a lot more.
Wow.
I really did not know what to... I mean, I'm enjoying Fantastic Four, but like, if you were just going to hand me the two issues out of this month, FF would definitely take the lead for this month. We'll see where they go as we go along. I mean, I really did not know what to expect out of Fraction's FF. I'm not saying his Fantastic Four has been like safer or anything, but it's, well, you know, it's the Fantastic Four go off on a trip together, they do the family thing, Ben feels like he's a bit of an outsider, Reed's keeping a secret from his family, it's all pretty tried and true, not bad, I'm not even criticizing him for reusing ideas, because these are all tried and true Fantastic Four mainstay plots, you know, but an Ant-Man, She-Hulk, Medusa, new character team-up book with the kids of the Future Foundation who are just really starting to come into their own outside of Hickman's mega arc that he was, because I mean, like, no harm to it, and because I love Hickman's Fantastic Four, but a lot of the Future Foundation kids really did not get to come into their own within the confines of that big arc as it was progressing, and they were just starting to in the post in that little 7-issue epilogue period at the very end of Hickman's run, and Fraction's really just running with that, and yes, like you say, over in Avenging, even they really have the voices of them down. I know a bit more what to expect out of them now. Still have not one clue about those Atlantean kids at all. What are you doing there? And do something. Like they just look funny in a crowd. Someone needs to figure out what their deal is and do something with them. They're really just crowd material at the minute.
Hmm.
Yeah. I also read Young Avengers number 2, but I think I've talked long enough about FF. Young Avengers number 2, things starting to come together a little more sensibly, you know. I mean, perhaps not proceeding directly from where we thought the end of number 1 would, because its parent, like Wiccan's parents, don't seem to be dead. Evil mum from another dimension seems to be, like, assimilating the world or something. It's quite mysterious. And there's
I don't
some
know why, but I liked issue 2 better than issue 1. Maybe because Loki's in it more.
That could be it, you know. Because Loki, we know Loki's had his eye on Wiccan, and then with this one, Wiccan is cast outside of... Well, kind of like cast outside of the panel border by Hulkling's evil mum. Like they throw, like she throws him through a hole in the panel, and he winds up trapped in a small 9-panel grid. And Loki just kicks in the corner of the panel to come and rescue him, and they run around outside the panel borders to go and find Hulkling. But
the best line is you know the scene in the diner. I love that.
Oh yeah, what was that? Well,
incantation.
The whole diner thing is great because I mean, this is very Journey into Mystery Loki. Like, I mean, Loki was kind of unreadable in the first issue and in the prequel issue, the point one story. We didn't know what was happening following on from Journey into Mystery, what Loki's status quo was. And we still don't. We really still don't know what the deal with him is. But he doesn't seem menacing here. Like, it was like, oh, we have to stop Wiccan. Oh, it's mysterious. I'm like, is it for good or for evil you want to stop him? I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what's going on. And in this one, he seems like it was just, you're going to unleash a hideous putty monster from beyond space and time. I had to stop that from happening, you know? I don't know what's. I mean, the questions are still there, but it's maybe it's just the warm, snuggly, familiar blanket of Kid Loki.
Good Loki though. If he keeps on making you guess, that's a good written Loki because that's how he's supposed to be. You're supposed to be on his side, then you're supposed to hate him, and then you're supposed to go back to liking him. That's how he gets you.
He teleports them after rescuing them. Like he teleports them to a diner, and just an ordinary diner, and they sit down. Let's take stock of our current predicament. What is our current predicament? Well, basically, it's a creature that lurks out there, looking to get its teeth into fledgling powerhouses like you. A tempting lure was waggled before your nose, and you bit, Mr. Wiccan. And in passing, as a pagan deity, I must say that is a terrible name. Are you even Wiccan?
Yeah.
I loved it. They're like, "What should I do?" And he says, "Well, I've got
suggestions."
Oh I'll my god! Of course.
Like he decides to go and give them time to chat, time to talk it over, and he goes, "I'll go and perform my personal favorite summoning ritual of all time: bacon engulfed in a flowery roll with the ketchup condiment." And the guy hands him bacon.
Oh my god.
And it's not like he doesn't magic it up or anything. He's ordering it at the diner.
He's ordering it.
Right.
He's just ordering a bacon roll. Bacon really is magic.
Yes, it is.
God. I mean, it's true, though. You know.
I mean, as an issue, it's not like totally perfect. I'm like, there's kind of like a logic gap here at the very end where it's like, I don't quite understand why Hulkling and Wiccan decide to do what they do in the last two pages of this issue. But it's the kind of thing where it's the sort of book where you just roll along with that. Yeah, it's happened. You know what? This book is peppy and just fun and innocent and light-hearted and spirited enough that you're just sort of carried along with it anyway.
Well, I think I'm more interested in it after reading this issue because now you're seeing sort of the global impact of what Wiccan's done. You know, like the first issue we thought, oh yeah, it's just his mom and something's off about her and she's evil. But it's not that, it's just that. I mean, it's like affecting everything now. I mean, by the end of the issue, you're like, what the hell is going on? You know?
The first issue was a very intimate sort of story about the two characters. And this issue starts out that way, but then it grows very quickly into something else. And I'm like, I mean, basically, you know, spoilers, it's not Hulkling's mom. You know, it's some creature that just lurks outside that, tricked Wiccan into summoning it into reality. And it's, she's got whatever she, we'll call it a she because it's in the form of his mum, but like it's got the parents under her control, and it's got, this is when I say the Uncanny Avengers appeared in this, it's got them under its control as well. Like, they go to the Avengers for help, and the Avengers go, well, we know exactly what to do, and they take them right back. So, yeah. Do you know what's going on?
It's like, your kids are running loose, you might want to do something about that, you know, basically.
Yeah. And then there's
there you go.
The ending is also a bit, what? But you know, my first reaction, I'm not going to say what the ending of the last page is, but a character appears, and my reaction is, isn't he dead? And then the next panel is one of the characters goes, isn't he dead? So I'm like, okay. Right.
Cool, we're there.
I'm done with that. Okay, plan. Yeah, Young
hey,
Avengers.
Hey, maybe you're writing this from the future, McFeely.
I'm writing it from outside the borders.
Right.
There you go.
I'm on board now. I don't know what happened next. I don't know what's going on.
I definitely agree with the criticisms you had of the first issue. Like, if you didn't read the past stuff, like, it just kind of threw an awful lot at you.
Yeah.
But the second issue kind of rolls with it and gives you enough, I think, to really bring you in.
We're going in a story. That's what I like about it. It's like, boom, we're going.
And definitely as well.
It seems like that's been happening a lot with these new Marvel issues, because same thing happened with the new Avengers. The same thing happened with Morbius. I hated the first issues, but I really like the second issue. So I always do give it the three issues a go. That's what I say.
This book is also a book that really knows its audience as well, because the recap page is a Tumblr.
Oh, God.
It's a Yambler, but it's a Tumblr dashboard. You know?
Wow.
With a little, the cast is down the side, you know, and then it's got all the popular tags. Oh, Billy, so many feels. Bacon divination variant covers.
God. Bacon divination.
Nice. And then I almost skipped past the title page because I thought it was an ad, but the title page is done up like a photocopied flyer for a band, some indie underground band playing at your local club.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, and I saw that too. When I saw that, it's like, is this?
Yeah. And it's got a joke about Watchmen in it as well, so that will bring in the smart readers.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah. We're all over the place then.
What was the Watchmen joke?
It's on the title page. The title of the story is DYS, and it just down at the bottom of the flyer it says, "Have you misspelled the city in hell, or do you mean the internet acronym?" And I don't know. I didn't know DYS as an internet acronym. I believe it means "Do you see?" But and the flyer answers itself and says, "Your Manichaean instincts repulse us." Manichaean? We only know the word because of Watchmen.
Ah. Wow. Okay.
I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that word right. So
I didn't even read the bottom of that, so that's why I missed it, because I didn't even read that.
Wow. Nice. Cool. Okay.
And that's me.
So this will be interesting, because this is one of those end of the shows where we're not like all of us are all over this. We're kind of split, I think. So I'll let Chris McFeely go through this quick overview. Probably there's not a lot of meat, maybe, but we'll talk about this. This will be interesting. So,
This is Guardians of the Galaxy number 0.1. We talked about Nova last week. Thought I'd check out Guardians to see what it was like, and it is. As 0.1, it is the origin story of Star-Lord. I know nothing of Star-Lord at all. I've read one or two tiny things in which Star-Lord has appeared. I know nothing of the character. I know nothing of his origin. So this was me going into this pretty blind. And
I think it's funny that you mentioned Nova, because when I first opened up this page, I'm like, wait, this is looks exactly like the first page of this. Almost looks like the first page of Nova.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely keeping the cosmic books in sync with that, because the first page is a shot of space, and then it opens on a double page spread of space with the title and the creators and everything, and the first couple of caption boxes of dialogue. Like, they're definitely keeping the cosmic books lined up like that. And it is a very classic sort of origin story, Silver Age-y thing, where the alien Jason of Spartax crash lands in the front lawn of a woman living in where is some nowheresville, USA. Where is it? Rocky Mountain High, Colorado.
Okay.
And he's ship is damaged. He stays there. He's on. He is, you know, alien royalty on the run. He stays there long enough to repair the ship. They fall in love. They get busy. He has to leave to return to his race. He can't bring her with him because it is too dangerous. He leaves. Turns out she's pregnant. 10 years later. You know,
this is 20 years ago.
It started out 30 years ago.
Okay, all right. It's back in. Okay, you're right. Never mind. Go ahead.
10 years later, Peter Quill is a kid with his head in comics, interested in space stuff, you know, which his mom doesn't want him to be interested in. She's raised him without a dad. He's very resentful of the fact he has no father. She does mumly stuff. He's a good guy at school, defends girls against bullies, standard stuff. And then they, in like, what would you say, the third act, the fourth act of the comic, they reprint the Star-Lord story from the Marvel Point One one-shot, in which Peter returns home from school after the bullying incident, and then two Badoon warriors arrive, having traced Jason of Spartax to Earth, kill his mom. He manages to kill them with a shotgun, discovers the gun that his father left behind with his mom. House explodes.
I was just trying to remember where I've read this before. I'm like, I never read this.
Yeah,
before.
I was in that.
I didn't read the Point One special. So they did recycle materials. What you're saying?
Yeah.
Is it just the end of the story? I guess.
Just up until he runs from the explosion.
Okay.
The whole way. There's more pages afterwards as well. Okay. wakes up in the hospital. Mom's dead. The hospital staff have recovered the gun, thinking it's just a toy. They gave it to him, and then we jump up to the present day, in which the uninteresting middle period of Star-Lord's life, in which he trained to become an astronaut so that he could get into space, happened, and now he's in space with the Guardians. He's just finished telling his life story to Iron Man, who is in space now, and is like, yes, I'll be joining up with you. Let's go kick some Badoon ass. And that's the long and the short of it.
Yep.
And,
I like the ad on the next page where it says next on 2/27/13. Wait, what?
Yeah.
God, I didn't even notice that. Oh, that's really
yes!
bad.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
Oops. About that.
Yeah, about that.
Cough. Well, yeah. Well, I have to say, contrary to you guys, I quite enjoyed this. It's a very straightforward. There's no surprises. It's a very straightforward Silver Age origin story, rightfully expanded to full story status over what would maybe have been a page and a half in a Silver Age comic. You know, I think that 0.1 is the dumbest thing ever in comics. It's even dumber than just having an issue zero. But the story that they've chosen to actually put in this actually fits what would probably go in like a pre number one issue. See, I think I normally roll my. It's like you guys remember. Alpha Flight, the Alpha Flight miniseries from a couple of years back. They did a 0.1, and it was just the first bit of the Buckin story.
Yeah. Yeah, it really wasn't. I mean, this is a legitimate 0.1. I'm not knocking it for that. I think it is
the Star-Lord origin story. It's like if I'd pick up Guardians of the Galaxy number one and got an issue-long origin of Star-Lord, I would be like, this is not issue one of Guardians of the Galaxy. Quite wisely, like Nova last week, it wisely, and unlike Young Avengers from last month, it wisely assumes that the audience has not read the Point One material or anything else starring Star-Lord and brings you in totally cold. In fact, I would even assume that the story is probably not going to continue directly into Guardians of the Galaxy number one. I would think issue number one will probably actually go back in time a little bit and show how Iron Man hooks up with the team, perhaps, and number mm-hmm. 0 points will fall in between the events. I was a little surprised when it turned out that they reprinted the Point One story, but that wound up giving you 31 story pages for your $4 instead of what would be the obligatory 20 or so that that things like Nova, like all $4 books give you out of Marvel 20, 22 pages, whatever yeah. it is.
Do you want to hear why I don't like this?
Go ahead.
Shoot.
Okay. My perspective is that a womb... finds a crash-landed alien, accepts his seed, and then is killed off when she's not important anymore. The end.
Well, I can see what you're saying there, and that perhaps is a failing of the story in that it initially chooses to set it from her point of view, and then does not set it from her point of view anymore. It's like probably should have started that story with Star-Lord, and then had her tell him that, you know, so that it's all around him, so to speak, and that it's information that is being relayed to him, and it still
would have been the same thing. I mean, this character had. I mean, and yeah, okay, I see what you're saying in the terms of saying, you know, she's there initially. But that doesn't mean that this character isn't used completely for the purpose of producing Star-Lord. And that the women in this, you know, at least in this book, are really portrayed very poorly. I mean, the only other female, there's two other females in this book. One of them is a nurse that gets, like, two pages. And then the other is this, you know, seemingly defenseless girl that Star-Lord has to save, you know, as a kid.
I think your problem really is that she's not going to be an Uncle Ben. I mean, purely this character is not going to be mentioned. I don't think she's going to be mentioned.
No, I mean, there's honest. No... I mean, and it is a completely throwaway character in that regard.
Well,
you know.
I don't know. It's being presented as... I know very little of Star-Lord, but it's being presented here that her death is the motivating factor for him. And to be honest, it's kind of odd in that it sounds like he's not really very interested in guarding the galaxy at all. And about... keeping the Badoon away from Earth in a sort of revenge play. So, I mean, she's definitely a motivator.
Is it a revenge play? Or I got the sense that he's more pissed off at his father than he is.
Yeah, he's really pissed.
He seems like he's more pissed off at his dad than he is at the people that killed his mom.
Yeah, like he wasn't there, and it's almost like his fault because he wasn't there.
So it's almost like he hates them both. Like, I didn't get the feeling like he's trying to protect Earth from Badoon. It's like he's trying to protect the Earth from... everything out in space, which just, and you know, hating your father like that when especially you don't know who he is or what, it just, I don't know. But
see,
I don't know
if he did ever go on to meet his dad again. I don't know Star-Lord history, so like there could be stuff in here that has since been dealt with, you know.
But I mean, this character, let's talk about, but again, like This the mother character, she's on the fucking porch in the beginning of this book talking about a previous relationship that ended. She has no purpose other than being a vagina. And it's like, that pisses me off.
Well, maybe it makes me a bad person, but I don't hate the comic.
No, I mean, but it's just, I understand that. I'm just saying, that's the reason it turned me off. Like, that initially just...
Apparently JD hates it worse than I do because I didn't care for it, but man, JD is like
he seems to really hate it.
Yeah. I'm not. Like, I just don't do it. And now let me clarify though. I don't like the Point One. I could probably totally love this book. Like I could see this being a book that I read and and like maybe it's Bendis, but whatever. I'm saying this Point One, I don't care for.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking I jumped the gun and maybe I should have waited for number one. But then I would know nothing about Star-Lord. Now I guess.
Maybe I would have been better off not.
No, think of it this way.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, what, Nicole?
This is how I pictured it. It's him telling his story, and he's just giving you the major details of... because he's talking to Tony Stark, right?
Well, that's the way it's... I mean, that's the way it's implied at the end.
He's not going to go through all the details of who his mother was, what she was doing. He's just going to give her, give Tony the basics. And so I think that's what you're getting. I mean,
I think the,
she
I think
might
the
have
book,
more stories in to come.
So, I think the bookends are tacked on. I mean, this is pretty close
to... Yeah, the story is not written as if it was told from his perspective, because he doesn't, he wasn't there when his dad crashed. You know, that's third party narrative. Even
what,
though the story
mom,
is being...
But his mom told him that story.
No, we don't... I mean, I don't...
No, she did. He
she
didn't know his dad was from space.
That's true.
Yeah.
He didn't know stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
He, this was never told to him. Like, maybe... Yeah. maybe again, don't know Star-Lord history. Maybe he met his dad later. Maybe his dad told him that story. Maybe,
don't
but like within the confines of the issue, it's not presented as
that's
it's
true.
Not. It's not written as if it's a story that the, he is telling. You know,
it feels like I think, and I think you were onto something. It feels like they had this middle bit Star-Lord story that was part of that point one, and then they tacked the ends on to make it a full story, and turned it into the point one, but. No, I don't get the feeling that the whole thing and like I said, from what I've looked at Star-Lord's origin, it's kind of, you know, massaged closely to it. It's not exact, but it seems to be massaged in that direction. So
seems like based on like the one sentence summary that I read is that it's filling in the detail. The one sentence summary was that he was born under an unusual planetary alignment.
Yes,
he became an astronaut. It seems like they're filling in the details around that. And I would say that some of that stuff's probably been done already, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, whenever you're relaunching a franchise like this and you're getting ready for films, going back and doing it all over again is not to be frowned upon.
No. But I think,
it takes a very straightforward classical fairy tale approach, like where the stranger from another world falls out of the sky and they fall in love in the span of a very short space of time and
finds a willing vagina to accept his seed and create the main character.
Come on, he's a good looking guy. He's a good looking guy. Come on, really. And he's a pilot. He's got two things going.
You're not helping, Nicole. You're not helping. Not helping. You're setting
that's
back.
I've been
you are setting back women's liberation as we speak.
I've been racking my brain trying to actually realize what it is that I'm comparing this to in my head. I've been drawing a comparison somewhere in the depths of my head that I haven't been able to vocalize. And Tricky in the chat has finally just brought it to the fore of my brain. It's Terminator.
Oh yeah, it is Terminator. You're absolutely right.
Sarah Connor.
No, because Sarah Connor actually was a strong character and actually did
in
stuff.
In Terminator 2.
No, she did stuff in Terminator 1, too. She killed the Terminator in Terminator 1.
She cried in Terminator 1.
I would have cried.
She sat on the opposite side of a steel press.
Hey,
what
now.
Happened.
Hey,
dude.
Now. Let us not
dude.
Forget. Is what happened.
Let us not did. Forget the Sarah Connor Chronicles. You know, she had a whole series about her.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'd rather if I could.
it is, but it's worse than that.
What I say, though, is that the more I think about it, is I'm just checking. No, she is actually. I was trying to think, is she even named? But she is named. So I was just.
Yeah,
was
she's
thinking,
named.
I thought she wasn't, but she actually is. Yeah, I was worried for a second there. But no, Tricky's right. That's the comparison I've been trying to make, but that I haven't.
Yeah, I get that now, but it's still, it's like, she's not, Sarah Connors is still a better character than this, so.
Well, because she made it out of film alive.
Let's put it this way, she has one conversation that isn't with a dude in this, and it's with her mom, and she's talking about girls. It's like, if you wanted to break...
If you cross Terminator down to 32 pages, that would happen there, too.
It's like Bendis like set out to like break like all the rules of, you know, it's like, is this a proper comic? You know, are women properly displayed in this book? He's like, well, let's make sure there's no more than one woman on the panel at a time and that they only talk about dating men. Okay, cool.
Don't ascribe malicious intent to stupidity.
No, I'm not saying there was intent, but I'm just saying it is stupid. And not
they,
very
they got
thoughtful.
Rid of the dinner table and it's now a bedroom.
Oh, wow. Well.
Yeah, because you know, they're talking. He's laying in the bed and they're talking. You know.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure. Oh no. Okay, well, they're sitting around drinking in the spaceship, but they're not sitting around eating lunch. You can tell it's a Bendis book because the frame exists as people are standing around, but they're not eating breakfast. They're just drinking.
They're just drinking. There is some sort of consumption involved, though. So there is a breakfast table scene, though. So
I hope at some point he writes a comic and he actually makes a joke about that, and somebody says, "God." It's like we haven't eaten in, like, you know, 5 or 6 issues. We've got to be starved.
I know.
Not gets better.
John, we've got to eat in this book.
Got to eat.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, Guardians of the Galaxy will probably be a fine book. I don't like this point one because I just can't. I just can't do it. I can't bring myself to like it. So, I don't know what to say other than that.
Well,
You're missing the point.
I'm missing the point.
You're missing something. Rocket is in this again.
He doesn't even have a line. Come on.
I don't care.
He doesn't have a line.
Him and Groot.
He's scenery. Besides, like, Iron Man would have stood there and listened to this whole fucking story and then signed on. He probably didn't even pay attention. He was probably listening to a game. You know, he probably had a football game tuned in, you know. He's like, what? Well, yeah, oh yeah, I'm totally in. Whatever.
What? You're giving free drinks? Okay, yeah.
Sweet, I'm there. This is non-alcoholic, though, right?
No
alcohol
in that spirit.
Because I got a thing, you know.
Ooh, can't have too much of that.
Yeah.
I don't care. Anyway. Rocket's in it.
I think you're right in that as an issue, it would probably have been structurally stronger if it had gone entirely from Peter's point of view. If it had started out with him as a kid, head buried in space comics, mom always telling him, you know, don't read those or whatever. And then maybe when he comes home from getting in trouble at school, then she finally sits him down and tells him
the story of his dad. Yeah, that might
only
you know.
For the to then appear, you know. And because it's then you start out with your mom, who is, why is his mom such a hard ass? What is it she's not telling him? And then we soften the character by telling a love story about her. And then the movie didn't come and kill her. And I'm like, yeah, structurally, it's probably a bit stronger than starting off a comic that appears to be her story told from her perspective, and then suddenly switching the channel up halfway through and her just becoming an ancillary character in someone else's story.
Yeah,
So there's a structural issue. With
a womb, if you will.
See,
she's
can write better than Bendis. I say.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Like, my version did not have anybody eating breakfast at any stage.
Right. So I mean, really. with the high art created by Brian Michael Bendis, his books.
But it's very Silver Age. It's actually funny. Like Nova from last week, it's a very Silver Age-y approach with some very classical tropes and characters and boxes to check. But I think the big difference is this does it in one issue, whereas Nova is approaching... This is viewing this as the expansion of what was probably a 1.5 to 2 page origin story in a Silver Age comic, I'm assuming, into a proper narrative that resolves itself in the span of an issue. Whereas Nova is like, yeah, what if we just did this as 5 issues? You know,
so
it's
like
better than Nova. That's my recommendation for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Nova was decent, and this is not so bad.
It's readable.
So, yeah.
So, like,
it does very much like Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, this is not really setting the stage or tone of Guardians of the Galaxy going forward. This is under a different climate. Would probably have been released of Guardians of the Galaxy Star-Lord number one. Follow Star-Lord into the new Guardians of the Galaxy series next month. A couple of years ago, like under a different climate, that's what this would have been released as.
Yeah.
So it's the first comic that's ever had a 0.1 on it that I can go, yeah, this seems about right. I wouldn't have wanted to have picked this up with a no. If I'd picked this up with a number one on the cover, I would have been kind of annoyed.
Oh yeah.
Because it doesn't get rolling at all. So it's the first comic I've ever read where I can go 0.1. Yeah, seems about right. So I'm giving it points for that alone, frankly.
So, I got a question real quick, I don't know anything about Star-Lord, and, you know, this is, you know, his origin, because I guess nobody knows anything about Star-Lord. How much of this do you think could show up in the movie? Would we need to know about Star-Lord in the movie?
Well, Star-Lord is going to be our, if they're doing the movie right, Star-Lord's going to be our POV character.
No, that makes sense.
Oh, I thought it would be Adam. I thought it would have been Adam.
Well, we don't even know if Adam's definitely in the film or not. I mean, Star-Lord is our, like, the guard. This has basically no relation to the classic 1960s, 70s Guardians of the Galaxy, save for the fact that it is a human astronaut transported out of his, well, in the classic 60s stories, it was out of his space and time. It's just his space in this version of the story, and teams up with a bunch of alien misfits. And they've made the Badoon the baddies in this. I don't think the Badoon were ever the baddies in the modern Guardians of the Galaxy, but they're the baddies in this now, and they were the baddies in the classic Guardians of the Galaxy, because the Guardians of the Galaxy set in the future. I think it was the 31st century, maybe? Mm. Was that the Legion? Where the Badoon had conquered Earth's solar system, and each of the Guardians was a representative of the race from each of Earth's solar system's planets, and they gathered with a human astronaut. So, I mean, I would have to assume that the opening scene of Guardians of the Galaxy has got to be, I think it might even just be like that point one story of young Peter Quill, and then the titles will roll after his
That's what I was thinking. We may be seeing the Guardians of the Galaxy movie in advance.
Yeah.
So JD may be complaining again about
it. Might be. It totally could happen.
They probably wouldn't,
I don't know.
Probably wouldn't show things from her point of view in the film.
Hey, cast like Megan that. Fox. Cast Megan Fox as Peter's mom, and then I'll be okay.
Be fine with that.
Yeah.
When the movie
but no special
out.
Effects. They have to actually kill her with lasers.
Well, I mean, I would say post-credits anyway, the first sequence of Guardians of the Galaxy will be the adult Peter Quill rocketing off into space, and then wormhole, Farscape style, shot off to wherever.
Spinning!
Well, I mean, let's be honest, this version of...
His spaceship froze in time.
The classic Guardians of the Galaxy... The classic Guardians of the Galaxy... And this version of Guardians of the Galaxy are Farscape. Or Farscape is the classic Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. You know, in a human astronaut, shot off into space, teams up with a bunch of alien, guys on the run.
I think it was called Buck Rogers, originally.
When they announced the summary of the Guardians of the Galaxy film, a lot of people did go, so it's Farscape. And I'm like, but
Farscape is
just Guardians. Galaxy,
Guardians Galaxy is just Buck Rogers, so...
Okay, I think Rocket Raccoon needs to be a Muppet now that we've connected it to Farscape.
Can we get someone... I've never seen Farscape, so I keep going back to Buck Rogers. So. I just want a little robot to go bitty-bitty-bitty.
Bitty-bitty-bitty.
I so want Rocket as a Muppet.
I want Muppets in Guardians of the Galaxy. Must happen.
God, they should do that. They should do Rocket Raccoon as a Muppet. That would be amazing.
Yes.
You never see
awesome.
His legs. Summers. He's always just running around at the front of the screen.
Yeah.
Do it, please.
Make it happen. I mean, I think probably we are seeing something that'll be very similar to the Guardians of the Galaxy film in this.
Yeah. Hopefully less sexist, but yeah, that would be great. I'm sorry. What am I? I mean, what do you want from me? I'm not going to change my spots. I can't.
No, sure, no.
Someone has to speak out because Nicole won't. Thanks, Nicole. No, I'm just kidding. She's like, what?
Hey, I'm saying he's good looking. He's a pilot. He's. I don't blame
the Nicole. Nicole, you are setting women back. Okay, you have just. That line alone has set women's liberation back at least 10 years.
Okay.
On your own.
Okay, so like an alien Ryan Reynolds crashes into your lawn.
Oh yeah.
You're fine.
That's Green Lantern. No, don't go there.
Wave her off. Wave her off.
God, no.
Lantern wasn't that bad.
Yes, it was.
Oh, God.
No.
Nicole, you're just wrong this episode. I don't know how that happened.
No,
it's just, we're just going to declare you wrong this episode. So maybe Skull Crushers isn't that great. So Anyway.
Oh, go read. It's pretty funny.
I don't know. I can't trust you anymore. You're wrong. You're wrong about so many things right now. Just.
Well, you know, JD, Tricky in the chat there says that you just have no clue on this one.
I have no clue. I have no clue. Okay.
That's what he said.
Okay.
I'm just reading out the chat, you know, going to interact with the chat.
Yeah, but does he have his own podcast?
Yes, he does.
Does he have his own podcast with Chris McFeely on it? Because that has authority.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Not really. Anyway, I got to get out of here. So that's our show. Tune in.
Well, he has just replied. He says, yes, he's got two, and I have actually been on it. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, what about Chris Triplett? Do you have a show with Chris Triplett on it?
God.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, sir.
That's like a downside. That's
no, it's not. Oh, God. You're supposed to help me out, bro.
Sorry.
Bro, you helped me out, bro.
Prime Gundam has just delivered the line to close the show out on. Now it's really turned into fanboy versus.
Zing! Zing. All right, bro, we end the show, bro. So, bro, you go to Hawkeye came out this week, people, by the way. I don't even know what to. I can't even tell you anymore to read this book because, oh my God, you should. Hawkeye.
Hawkeye. What are you talking about?
Hawkeye. No. The girl with the car returns. Not with the car, but the girl that sold the car, and it's excellent. Hawkeye thinking with his pants. Anyway, so that's the show. Tune in, Fanboy Versus, live on tfradio.net.
So tune in
live.
Next week to see what JD's wrong on.
Whatever. Whatever. Where's the disconnect? Disconnect.
This will be my last podcast.
No. tune in at 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT, tfradio.net/live. You can also find the show at fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter as well. FanboyVS is what you want to go to on Twitter. And we usually live tweet through the show. And even like this week, I tweeted a little bit early, and we had a nice chat about navels and hands.
What?
Apparently More Than Meets the Eye is all about hands.
Okay.
I didn't know this, but I was slightly convinced after that conversation. So I'm just saying. Think about it. Lots of hands. Hands being cut off. Different hands. Parts of hands.
Yeah, that's right. And speaking of More Than Meets the Eye, Transformers comics on sale at Comixology. Need to mention
big sale.
Good sale. Good sale.
Last Stand of the Wreckers as well, yeah. So
yeah, I believe you can get all of Last Stand of the Wreckers for $4 at the minute.
Yeah, that is a steal, kids.
Yeah.
You want to get that.
Yeah.
I got another copy just for my Kindle. I was like, hell yeah.
Heck yeah. Totally. So anyway, so that's it. That's the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.